Hello and welcome back to Sea Gazing, a podcast about conservation and community in Scotland, with me, Nicolette McLeod.
And me, Graeme Richardson.
And you join us today sometime in December, so this is sort of a kind of Christmas episode.
Actually, but not really. It's probably 2021, because I released this a little bit late. So less of a Christmas special and more of a New Year special.
How are you doing, Nico? Are you enjoying this winter time?
This winter time. In ways. That's a slightly guarded answer. I think the Christmas tree's up in the corner, so that's very nice. We managed to get one that was grown in a pot in Scotland and is, you know, also not grown in a monoculture, so that was positive. So this is my very ethical Christmas tree.
I mean, mine wasn't grown in a monoculture either because it's plastic.
So that's good.
Reusable plastic.
I mean, we can't afford any Christmas presents now, but that's fine. So.
Well, you say that. I was thinking, Nico, what makes a Christmas or a holiday episode, whatever, of Sea Gazing? And I didn't know. Under normal circumstances, I would guess we should exchange gifts. But we can't do that because Nico lives in Glasgow and I live in Edinburgh. So I did draw you a little card just before we started.
Oh, that's so maybe cute. You can. Oh, my word.
And when I say just before we started, I mean like 5 minutes before. So. So I think you should explain it to the listeners. What's on the card?
Oh, this is literally adorable. So we have a beautiful, beautiful sea, which is made up of blue and greens and lighter blues and some whites. And it has some lovely words, which has...
Well, what's jumping above the sea?
I believe it is a beautiful whale that has a Christmas hat on it.
It does. And written beside the whale is... Have a whale of a Christmas.
Do you like the way he had to read his own punchline? Because he just loved it so much.
I will send this to you when... I don't know, is that allowed? Who knows what's allowed?
I think it's allowed.
Oh, great.
I've sent a lot of things out today. I haven't sent a card to you because I don't have your new address.
It's all right. No, the cards are all recycling and stuff. I had this paper to draw on, so thought I'd use it.
That was a lovely thing. So now I'm feeling embarrassed. So we can move on to another part of the podcast.
We can. Well, if it makes you feel better, I also decided that a Christmas quiz was very Christmassy. So we can do that later for you as well.
Everyone knows that I love a Christmas quiz. People who know me well know how much I love quizzes.
The reason I did one for you was because I was afraid you would do one for me. So I thought I'd get that in there first.
Thank you, Graeme. So,
no, no problem.
I look forward to later in the podcast with apprehension. But we're going to start off, we're going to do a segue, we're going to do like the question that we normally ask other people.
Can we not say we're going to do a segue?
I love announcing. I do this when I do live shows. I'm like, so I'm going to do a segue now. And then I just move over to the piano. It's a really like classy move. Gets a laugh.
Well, I think we should say first that this is a special episode for another reason, in that we do not have an interviewer today, or an interviewee today. It's just going to be myself and Nicolette talking. So again, if you want to switch off, do it right now. We're going to do a bit of, I guess, sort of a bit about the journey of the podcast and what we find particularly interesting this year, especially with our guests.
And looking to next year.
It's been pretty eye-opening, but... I do think we should start with the question we ask all our guests. So I'm going to ask you, close your eyes, and I want you to picture the sea. And can you tell me, when you picture the sea, what is that image that comes up in your mind?
I think I get a number of images, but I think one in particular that comes is actually... sea, so that would be in Portugal, on a very warm day with two extremely good friends, and immersing myself fully in very cold water. That is the what sea is it?
Well, I don't know if it's in like a bay or something, but Atlantic Ocean.
It is the Atlantic. I wanted to say Atlantic, and I was like, oh god, got it wrong. It was. Freezing. I was about to say a naughty,
freezing.
Naughty word there. It was very cold. I find sometimes when I remember I was thinking about something at the time and I was feeling quite serious, and then I had full immersion in freezing water and I felt so much better. So I think it's that kind of memory of how that connecting to not only the sensation of water, but also the acknowledgement that we're all connected. We're not all connected, but lots of island masses are all connected by this amazing mass of water. And I can't look at the sea without kind of thinking about that and thinking about people in different places and all the creatures that are also underneath. So it's probably that.
Do you go swimming here in the sea?
Yes, I do. But where I live is like not particularly near the sea, being in Glasgow. I've been in some lochs over the summer. I think I need to invest in a wetsuit to do some more of that. Because in September it was quite cold. That's the last time I went into a loch. It was cold.
Well, I was down by Granton Harbour, New Haven Harbour, I can't remember, which is North Edinburgh, yesterday. And I saw a few people getting out of the sea and not screaming in pain, which I was surprised. Maybe all their senses were so numbed.
Were they in wetsuits? No.
Some were, some weren't.
Okay. But I imagine there are people who maybe, because I know some people who regularly sea swim.
Oh, yeah.
Actually all over the UK, and that's maybe something they do daily or at least weekly. So it's really important that you sort of build up that resilience. And don't just do it. Sorry, this is a health and safety coming in here, warning.
Yeah.
Don't just do it because you think it'll be really nice to go in the sea, because especially don't do it if you're alone, because it's actually quite dangerous.
Yes, I completely agree. And I am very envious of people that can do it. I just need to get over that cold shock panic. And the back, I just...
You just got to go for it.
Well, next time we can meet in the sea, you can throw me in and watch me cry like a baby.
Big push rather than throw. I'm not sure I'm strong enough to okay. throw you. So turning that question back to you, Graham, now with that very strange image. Graham, when you think of the sea, what memory or place is it that comes to mind?
Well, it's interesting because I think your answer was the first holiday answer we've had in the podcast so far, and I am much less original, because for me I think it's the areas of coast around where I grew up. And Belfast, I mean, it is in the sea, but there aren't necessarily beaches there. You have to drive a little bit to one of the sides of Belfast Loch, or even just a little bit down the east coast of Strangford Loch. So I think it's one of two places. The first one would be a country park called Crawfordsburn, which there's a path along by the coast. There's beaches, sort of short sand beaches and some rocks as well. You get some birds there. It's on the banks of Belfast Loch. And it's just very, very calming, sort of the place I would think of going to on a Sunday afternoon when I was a kid. And it would either be that or the aquarium, which is down in Portaferry on Strangford Loch. And it was probably one of the first places where I saw like really awesome wildlife. And I remember the touch pool where you could touch the ray swimming past. I have no idea if that's ethical anymore, but I mean, for me as a kid, it was just incredible fun. So that's probably the first time I would have seen animals from the sea. And it's very affecting, isn't it? I mean, you know, people have that experience either because they live in the countryside and can see animals everywhere, or animals in a zoo or an aquarium or something like that. So yeah, I think it is very much, when I picture the sea, it's very much linked to childhood.
Just as you began to talk there, actually, I remembered a particular memory that probably is often one of the other first ones that comes, which is not being at the sea, but driving home from the sea. So it's like
driving home from the sea, headlights all around.
There we go. That's the Christmas song.
That's the Christmas song.
And sitting in the back of the car and having that wonderful feeling on your skin when you've like been in the sun all day and been in like cold water and air, and you kind of like every part of you feels really like tingly and alive, but also really tired. And that just kind of memory of driving away, but knowing it was behind, and looking through the back windscreen to still look at the horizon as we were leaving. And that's a really
clear image for me as a kid.
It's very a poetic child there, looking back.
It all went wrong.
Across the horizon. And it all went wrong.
So we had another question for one another, which was talking about what our highlights have been as we've done work this year on the podcast, and maybe sharing some of those with one another and with you all listening.
Yeah, and we would like to hear what your highlights were as well, because we'd be really interested to hear how you'd like the podcast to move next year, because we do intend to keep going. This isn't just five episodes and out. So please do share just the things that you connected with you from our guests, especially, because they're the people that work literally every day with the sea. But to answer your question, I've really enjoyed finding out about the diversity that we have here in Scotland. But it's true, even through a degree, I did a biology degree, a biology and French degree, not sure that exists anymore. But even through that degree, we did some aspects of the sea, because it was in St Andrews, which is a gorgeous coastal town. But I don't think I really learned or maybe paid enough attention to what was happening around us in Scotland. It feels like you get quite a global perspective of seas and oceans and oceanography and marine biodiversity and stuff like that. But I really think this year, through doing the podcast, one of my favourite things has been finding out about the rich seas that Scotland have. Like, it really is incredible. And there's some sort of, if you would ask Joe Bloggs on the street, where do you find most animals in the world? You think of tropical places, coral reefs, or rainforest, or something like that. But there's something to be said for a really highly productive, the amazing amount of food that you find in the cold waters here in Scotland that really creates, the word paradise is overused, but it just creates an amazing amount of habitats, an amazing amount of feeding resources for the animals that we have here. And that's why we get so many animals coming into our waters. And I don't want to say Scottish animals or British animals, because obviously, you know, they don't have borders like we do. So the animals that come into our seas and use our waters, you know, make use of the waters around Scotland, it's just incredible. And hearing your reaction in the first episode you did with Jenny to some of the names of the animals we have was just amazing. But even like someone who studied biology like myself, I still had a pretty steep learning curve. I'd heard of maybe sea mice before, but I'd never heard of sea lemons or
the brainy octopus. Sorry, or a video of a sea mouse if you haven't already.
Yes, we can link them on that Aaron Coast sent to us, and I squealed that.
It's so cute. I mean, but don't imagine a mouse.
Don't
imagine a mouse. They're very cute.
But actually, that is one other thing I'd like to say is the bits I remember from the interviews we've done, because I listen to them so much, and it's really interesting the stuff you retain, and the bits I retain that I could almost speak word for word are the bits when people get really passionate, like when Alison Lomax from the Hebridean Whale and Dolphin Trust talks about the first time she saw a dolphin in Scotland, and she's like, I screamed, and you know, I lost my cool completely, and told everyone around me there was a dolphin there. And moments like that were really, really special. Passion speaks.
I would agree with that, and I think, to answer the question that I asked myself, certainly one of my highlights has been talking to people, individuals who are really passionate about the work that they're doing on the coast, and they're doing something with that passion. You know, they're setting up projects, they are working in that area, and they are lots of them involved in education. So everyone knows the work that's happening and what creatures and species we do have in our seas. And again, I have learnt, having not trained in biology, I come from a even less educated viewpoint about sea life. Less informed about marine life. Unless you count Sharky and George.
Sharky and George.
The Little Mermaid. So.
Well, we should also point out for anyone who doesn't listen, because we have listeners in Canada, Germany, the Czech Republic, Argentina even, I saw. Sharky and George was an amazing, I think it was British.
Yeah.
British cartoon about two sharks.
Yeah.
Shark and a fish.
Who were, weren't they like investigators, didn't they like?
Yeah. Private Eyes.
And they had a very cool theme tune. And I thought they were awesome. So I suppose it's similarly learning about new species, but also learning about, I think, I didn't know how much of the stat around Scottish coastlines and actually how much mileage we have of Scottish coast. And when you think about it, it makes sense. We have loads of islands, we have all these amazing inlets, and when you look at the coastline, there's nowhere where you could draw a straight line. Maybe there is, but it's very, very short because it's so wiggly. So we have tons of coast. And tons that I haven't been to. So I've spoken to some individuals on places, and I'm now dying to go there. So I think I've also found that not only has my excitement for under the water been kind of ignited, but also these different areas of land that are by coast, particularly, I think, some of the individuals I've spoken to who are around Argyll, which isn't too far from Glasgow, so further up and then west. So when we spoke to Danny at Loch Cranish, and then I've spoken to individuals who are a bit further south from him, I've just fallen for that place. So much so that I've written a piece of music that's based on one of these areas, which is a particular park that's up there that kind of has lots of these different habitats within it. When I was reading about it, they were talking about this sort of old forest areas, and then they've got kind of marshland as well, and then rock pools in the nearby water. So there's just the wealth of habitats, I think, in a small area is something that I find really exciting. So yeah, lots.
Do you have a top three list of places to go when lockdown ends in Scotland?
Top three places to go would be Fair Isle, Loch Cragnish, and actually on the boat with Hebridean Dolphin and Whale Trail.
Oof, yeah.
Is that cheating? Just like a mobile?
No, not at all.
Lots of places. What about you, Graham?
I mean, Fair Isle still has to be in the top three. I really want to go to Barra, which is one of the islands in the Outer Hebrides. And, oh goodness, where's next? I want to go back to, so I tried to go to Knapdale, which is an area in Argyll this year, to see the beavers. We didn't see the beavers, so that's I would say number three as well. But there's so many places.
That's the area, that's a nice link to the song, Graham. That is the area that I sing about in this song. Near Tavellach and near Tainish. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's there. That's what the song's about. I'm dying to go there.
Shall we listen to it?
Yeah.
Heath and salt marsh, grassland glades, swallows in flight, beetles under twigs. Thank you. brittle stars, urchins and sea squirts. Otters, halts, and transient birds. Carve my heart with pictures made, shifting light on sea. Tapestry blue fields. Carve my heart with colors made, primrose bright and russet red. See us as we are. Ancient woods with lichen hands hold me.
It's time for the quiz with Nico. It's time for quiz time with Nico. I knew you would love this. Nico, Nicolette McLeod. Sounds funny in my accent, I never thought about that. I've got some questions for you. Are you ready for a good full-on fun time quiz?
Yeah, I mean, fun time says it all.
So what I've done, it's five questions. There's no prize except joy. I tell you what, if you do well, you can see me sometime next year. Probably.
We'll see.
So we've got a question based on each episode. I guess we should do them in order then. Nico, are you ready for question one?
For those of you at home, there is a look of fear on my face.
Yeah, yes, it's true. Okay, so question one, based on the interview with Jenny Stark from Arran Coast. The sea mouse is an animal, but what type of animal is it, according to Jenny?
Something that lives on the bottom of...
It's not a mouse, it's a typer! Nicolette's face is done.
I want to say cucumber, but it's not a cucumber. It's not a sea... We talk about sea cucumbers, that's all I can remember, and people eating them somewhere else. It's not a mouse, it's a worm.
Yes! Worm. 1 point! It's a type of worm you find in the seabed. Specifically, I think a polychaete worm, but as I don't remember what polychaete worms exactly are, it's a type of marine worm. Well done, 1 point.
Wow, that was somewhere there.
Somewhere there. If we can put a ding sound. Ding. Okay, well done, Nico. That's 1 out of 1. Okay, so question number 2, based on the interview with Alison Lomax from Hebridean Whale and Dolphin Trust. It's a little more tricky, not going to lie. Do you remember the West Coast community, the resident population of killer whales we have? Yeah. So in the episode, we talk about an individual who was seen around Mull during the lockdown and who they Facebook lived, which is one of my favourite stories from lockdown, Facebook living the sighting of a killer whale around Mull. And do you remember, Nico, what that whale was called?
No. No, I want to say it's not a big something. It's like a something something. Yeah, it's got it's a two-part. Go for it, tell me.
Two-parter. Okay, you give up?
Yeah.
The name of that whale was John Coe.
Oh, yeah! Yeah, I wouldn't have remembered that.
Which I always read as John Coe for ages until I actually saw it was written John Coe. But yes, one of the big males left in the West Coast community, which is actually kind of a very sad story. You can go back and listen to that. It's not for Christmas episode. Okay, question number 3 from the interview with Danny Renton from Sea Wilding. What is the apparatus used to hold bebe oysters called in Loch Ness?
An oyster hoister!
Oyster hoister! Well done.
And if you want to get involved with the work that they're doing and give some money towards supporting a oyster hoister, buy your own, in fact, which I think is how it works, or rent one, do that. And if you'd also like to petition Princess Anne, gently, not petition, write her a nice little letter or to say, how about would you like to purchase one of these fabulous oyster hoisters? Go ahead and do that.
Because she has a yacht there, not just because yes, we're focusing on Princess Anne.
Thanks for the link. And, where she goes, others may follow. So,
Someone on Twitter bought an oyster hoister from listening to our episode, I think.
Indeed,
which is quite
did.
Nice.
It's very cool.
Lovely. Okay, question number 4. You're going to hate me. We talked about marine protected areas at the start of episode 4. Mm-hmm. So, do you remember the name, and I'll accept the acronym, of this type of marine protected area that specifically targets birds?
Special.
Yes.
Area.
Yes, that's the third one. What's the middle? Special blank area.
Protected.
Yes, special protection. Yay! Areas. I'm so proud of you. Nico, I'm very impressed. Episode 4, by the way, was a really interesting talk with Catherine Gemmel. So please go to listen to that one as well. The last one, it's a little trickier. Because I geeked out a lot about birds in episode 5 on Fair Isle with David Parnaby. But do you remember there was a type of seabird that created a cloud on Fair Isle every time the plane landed? But unfortunately they're not doing it anymore because their numbers have dropped. Nicolette McLeod, what is that bird?
What letters does it begin with? I want to say K. It's not a K. It is a K. Okay. It's not Kittiwake. Yes! It's a Kittiwake!
It's really... a Kittiwake!
Hey!
Nico, I'm very impressed. In your Christmas quiz, special season Christmas quiz, you score 4 out of 5. Big round of applause from everyone at home. Congratulations.
Thanks, Graham. Going to move on to something slightly different. So rather than a quiz, I'm going to give Graham the opportunity to talk us through some of the changes that have happened since we started this podcast earlier in the year. So, Graham, it's going to be more factoids from you.
Can I still score points?
Okay, you can score points, yes. There are five things that I would like you to mention, which we have bullet pointed here.
Oh, okay, great. Cool. I have the answers in front of me. No, I mean, that's something else that surprised me, just how quickly things can move and things can happen. So we started our first episode, we recorded in July, which seems like a very long time ago. But since then, there have been some changes in policy, some movements forward, and it just feels like the coasts and our seas really are more in the eyes of the public and in the eyes of politicians as well, which is good, and hopefully that means positive changes. But yeah, very briefly, I did a tweet about this a while back. We have some new marine protected areas, for four nature conservation marine protected areas that were designated, was it the start of December? I don't remember now, but about a month ago maybe. And they're protecting various features, including lots of cetacean species, the Risso's dolphin, as well as things like the basking sharks and sand eels and so on and so forth. And there are also more special protection areas, which specifically target...
Birds! Yes, birds! But I was trying to remember the acronym again.
SPA. So when I try to remember it, I picture a gull just lying back in a jacuzzi.
Oh, that's a good technique.
Yeah. The point is that there is more legislation passed to protect more of our waters in Scotland. But as Danny, I think it was, pointed out, they only protect certain things. So... it's not that, say, the seabed is protected in all of these places, so only certain things will be managed or banned, and actually managing the marine protected areas properly isn't something we're great at doing yet.
Yeah, so real pressure really needs to be put on the Scottish Government moving forward to actually start protecting these protected areas more fiercely, I would say.
More fiercely.
How's that?
That's good, yeah. So that was one thing. I also just watched, literally today this morning, the announcement about the new Marine Scotland assessment for 2020, which has a lot of information I haven't delved into yet. But basically, it's split down all of our seas, inshore and offshore, into, I think, 21 different regions, and provides a lot of information that will drive specific policies and initiatives. And a lot of data has been provided by 250 scientists, and I'm sure some of those are coming from groups we've talked to, certainly people like Marine Conservation Society. So that's good. That's a document I'm really looking forward to getting into, and we'll try and...
if you can disseminate it so I can then understand it, that'd be great, Graham.
Okay. I was going to say for our listeners, but yes.
But for me as well, and then for our listeners. That's how it works.
It looks... do you remember, one thing I'll say of the policy documents is they include a lot of pretty pictures. So.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Thanks, Graham.
No. I enjoy them particularly when I'm finding it difficult.
And one of our interviewees or organisations that we interviewed a person from also won some kind of award this year. Is that true, Graham? Can you tell us who and what?
They did, it's true. So when the Nature of Scotland Awards were announced again, I think it was maybe a month and a half ago. But yeah, the Hebridean Whale Trail, which I think sounds amazing, and just to recap is a number of sites around Scotland from where you can see whales and dolphins on the coast, and is well worth looking into. It was named winner of the Coasts and Waters Award, so that's incredible news for them. So they now also, as well as having an award-winning trail, they have an award-winning app. It's incredible. And just in other good news, I think the last thing I wanted to say was that the Fair Isle Observatory fund for rebuilding the observatory is up to about close to £500,000, and they're aiming to get to £650,000. So yeah, if you can, please do send some money in, and if that's not possible, which is totally understandable, please just share that story, because it would be great to visit Fair Isle with an amazing observatory again.
Yes, it would. So thank you for sharing those little factoids with us, Graham. And what are you looking forward to next year? I feel like I'm really the interviewee now. I'm enjoying this interview.
Yeah, I'm going to switch it right.
I've also got a spinny chair. I'm spinning on my spinny chair and asking Graham a question.
Next year, oof. On a personal note, I'm looking forward to staying engaged because this is the year I've been most engaged with conservation and what's going on right now, especially on a local level, probably ever. So I can't wait to keep on doing that through this podcast, through work, through volunteering opportunities, hopefully. But at the same time, there's some really interesting stuff happening in Scotland. COP26, which is the next big environment conference, is happening in Glasgow. I want to get involved in that. There's also going to be more chat about a Blue Economy Action Plan, which is basically talking about how we can benefit from the sea from an economical perspective, but also how we can sustain it, which I think is really the important point that we're trying to make. There's also going to be a review of the National Marine Plan 2021. Doesn't sound the most exciting thing in the world, but it's basically how we are going to manage our oceans from 2020 onwards. I've talked a lot. Nico, tell me, what are you looking forward to next year?
Well, if I'm really honest, I can't kind of quite think of next year without disattaching from the current place we're in, which is obviously the reality of being in the pandemic and having travel restrictions. But I think in amongst all of that, it's sort of some of my takeaways from this year, I suppose, and looking at how to take those forward. And I think for me, that certainly would be, talking to more people about the work that they're doing. I feel excited to talk to more people about the work they're doing around coastal communities and areas and conservation. I feel really hopeful and anticipation about what I'm going to learn and how we can share that with other people at home and get hopefully other people inspired as well to take part in citizen science at home or to take little steps of things that they can do to make a difference. I think I also am aware of kind of prior to next year, actually, having a bit of a sit down over the next sort of week or two with myself and thinking, okay, what are the things that are really important to me next year that I want to focus on? And those might be changes that I want to make kind of in the way that I live.
You're a resource guzzling Nicolette right now, I can tell.
Yeah, so resource-guzzling.
Just throwing plastic into the sea.
Yeah. But I'm sure there are still more things that I can do that maybe I've overlooked in some way. So I suppose kind of looking at what that might be. And when things do open up a bit more, I'm going to visit some places, hopefully doing some live interviews with people, with Graham, that would be brilliant. Maybe making some little videos about these places as well, or films, that would be great. It's quite a lot to be excited about. I think for me, actually, this project's been a really important way of focusing some of the anxiety that I do feel about the future and putting it into a positive way to sort of move forward. So it's like, okay, so I'm worried about the environment. I have some resources, i.e. time. I'm in a privileged position to have that. What am I going to do with it? Yeah. Surround yourself by people who are passionate and engaged and encouraging and are wanting to do something for the environment and for all of our futures. I mean, to me, that's really important, and to seek out more people who share the same passion so we can all work together for the survival of the race and the planet, which is basically what it comes down to. Just quite a big goal, but
yeah, big goal, big
ask. We all have to do our tiny part to work towards that.
Yeah. And encouraging people who have a bit more power to do the same.
There we go. Too much?
No, not at all. I think those are very achievable goals for 2021. And you know what? Do you know what? Donald Trump isn't president anymore, so I think anything's possible. Big sigh of relief.
That is a fact. Big sigh of relief.
Yeah. Other things I could say.
I think we're gonna round up with maybe some words from other people about what they think of when they think of the sea and what comes to mind for them.
Yeah, this is a very important part of the podcast. It's not just a nice question at the start. We really do think it's important to people to think how they're connected with the sea. So we've asked a few friends to tell us what they think of.
When I think of the sea, I think of something moving and not static, something that is all-encompassing, that it takes in your senses, your sight, the touch of the wind and the waves, the sea spray, the colours, the moving, the coming and going, the revealing and the hiding. There's so much that you need to take in. It's the freshness of the breezes that come, and it's just the depths that are there, that are hidden. It's just a real sense of being alive, of being a part of something so much bigger than you could ever imagine or take in.
For me, it's the wonder of the tides. And I know there are books that set out precise times for the tide, and there are people that have to know all these things. But for me, it's always a surprise, as I never know where it's going to be. With day seeing it so high that it leaves no space at all. And then those special low days when it stretches right out and invites you backstage to this hidden world. So wonderful.
Swimming away from the shore always feels like entering another world. But on this morning, the water felt silky smooth against my skin, even as it burnt with the cold.
When I was, I don't know, about 5 or 6, and we used to go out and wait, more or less, on a boat and by the sea. And if we did catch a fish, the fish would come out, the fish would come for a photo, and then we put the fish back in the sea. But it was the companionship between my grandfather and I, and the sense of waiting for something to happen, surrounded by the sea.
My own experience of the sea is very visceral. It's of salt on the mouth. It's that feeling of spinning, even on calm days. It's that shock of your breath taken away
calm,
by the cold.
Peaceful.
But it's also one of beauty.
Respectful.
And seals of basking
immense.
Sharks swimming right beneath you.
I feel tiny. I am tiny.
One of the things that comes to mind is a memory of a big grey seal, affectionately known as Sammy, who would frequent a wee harbour at a place in the Hebrides where my family would holiday.
Ready and waiting, as long as you are brave enough to step away from the comfort of the shore.
Vast, can be cold, it can be hot, can be so many different things. To some people it can be frightening or it can be welcoming. Just an amazing, moving, forever-changing animal.
When I think of the sea, I think of the Irish Sea, because since before I was even born, I've been backwards and forwards across that green, choppy water more times than I could even begin to count. It makes me think of family, happiness, excitement, anticipation and holidays. And then when I lived in Ireland, crossing the sea meant coming home. There's one particular bit of the Irish Sea that I always think about, and that's a kind of rough bit somewhere in the middle. And we always called it where the wattles meet. And to me, that signified crossing from Scotland to Ireland or from Ireland to Scotland. And it meant that you were nearly halfway or over halfway to your destination. Always got a wee bit rough, but once you got over the rough bit, it was smooth sailing again to bring you home.
We go to the sea to breathe. Thank you.
Thank you.